everybody, and welcome back to a new edition of Live from Pawnee. I'm Alan, and with me, as always, is my co-host Mark. Mark, are you here this time? You're here.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm doing better. Good. I'm doing a lot better.
Whew, you are.
I've been told that I'm doing a lot better.
Yeah, so. I don't know if our listener at home or our viewer, whatever we call him now, that one guy, if he heard the little teaser thing we did, but you were having a little bit of trouble with finishing this podcast.
All right, look, I don't want to dwell on this too much, but first of all, first things first, our viewer, his name's Ted.
Ted, okay.
Thank you for continuing to join in. We greatly
appreciate
you.
Actually, it's Theodore.
No, it's Ted. I've checked. It's Ted.
It's in the bylaws.
Why he gets thrown in the lake. Yes, I'm feeling much better. You know, Alan, as journeys, we'll find as a theme here, as journeys approach their end, there is a lot of introspection and contemplation.
Sure.
And sometimes that can lead us to
I also think about stuff too, but yeah.
You're so smart. And sometimes that can lead us to an interesting place, and sometimes that can lead us to a bad place. And I'll be the first one to admit.
A little dark.
It was a little dark where I went. There's like stalagmites and stalactites.
Well, there are no stalagmites in Constantine's
bats.
The little recording closet there.
I didn't know what that was. I thought that was some sort of mechanized hell. I don't know what he does in there.
We don't want to know what he does on his own time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the good news is, you know as well as I do, here at LFP Worldwide Headquarters, we have world-class therapists. That's what the diploma that she
good
has.
Good coffee. That's what I tell everyone.
Good coffee. And I know that she's a world-class therapist because she has it scrawled in crayon on the diploma on her wall.
Yes.
So I believe Crayola.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Crayola University.
That's right. See you, baby. So I feel much better now. Mark and I'm fine. It's Shades of Craig.
Wow. I like that. Well, you know what? I got to say, Craig is a little bit crazy, but I think his affirmations are healthy.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like Stuart Smalley. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like me.
Or what's the other one? I love Stuart Smalley. And then isn't there the other one? Deep Thoughts with Jack Handy.
Yeah. Those are both.
That has a little bit more of an edge to it.
It does. We were just talking about Phil Hartman here at the house the other day.
Phil Hartman, we barely knew ye.
Oh, man. So true.
Yeah.
What a genius.
He's just a chameleon.
He really was.
He could do anything.
He could be anything.
Do you know, trivia, Phil Hartman trivia, for those of you who are expecting that in our show, do you know that he actually got his start as a computer programmer?
I did.
Isn't that nuts?
I love that.
What a nerd.
What a nerd. All computer programmers are nerds.
Oh, completely.
Totally.
I would never say otherwise.
Well, of course not.
Mm.
So. Mm. Well, Mark, you know what we're here for.
No.
It's time to talk about it.
Okay.
We're here to talk about season 7.
See, I thought I was already, and I felt it's.
Do you feel the tug of despair just for a moment?
It's fine. I'm Mark, and I'm fine. Look, everybody, ladies and gentlemen, here's what I have to say.
Yeah.
Alan has been my rock to get me through this.
I'm so sorry.
So steady up there, buddy, because I weigh a lot, and you got to get me through this. But yeah, this is hard, but we're going to do this. So I apologize, Alan. You beautiful land-based mermaid. See, the and compliments don't work with you.
No,
please continue
really
on.
I'm going to do my best to get us through this, Mark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just go, man. Don't look at me. I'm hideous.
You are Mark and you are fine.
Yeah.
I'll help.
Okay.
See, there you go.
Thank you.
Mark, today we're talking about season 7, episode 12. Yes, that's it. It's called One Last Ride, and it is literally Ann Perkins, the last episode, canon episode.
Well, I mean, kind of, you know, it just
we'll
depends.
Get back
like,
to that.
Look, you know,
of Parks and Recreation.
Around, around on this, like, right? You know how
just
much I murmured myself.
No, we don't have time for that today.
No, it's fine.
Don't make me come over there.
It's the fine. All right.
All right. So here we go.
Final canon episode.
Yeah.
This one first aired on
February 24th of 2015, this aired at a 10 p.m. slot, Mark, which is very rare
that
for
is
Parks
rare.
And Recreation.
And it might be worth pointing out, I know we've said this before, but everything in season 7, with maybe one exception, we're all back-to-back episodes.
Yeah.
This is no exception. So like you said, for example, this is season 7, episode 12. I feel like that's true, and yet technically it's probably listed as 12/13 in some places.
It's not.
Get out of here. Really?
No, actually, almost every place I can find this, and this is a little different than London and some others, they aired this as a 1 hour episode. Now, what they did do, I'm certain, and I need a time machine, which don't remind me to tell you something about that. I would need a time machine.
We got one.
I know.
Doesn't really work
I would need a working time machine.
Mm, there you go.
See, there's the clarity.
Yeah.
to go back and know for certain, but based on having been a network television viewer for many years of my life and not being, you know, 15, I'm a little older than that. Here's what they did.
Yeah.
They did their 23 episode with commercials. They faded to black. They may have even rolled credits and aired this as two parts. However, it's nowhere that I can find listed as two parts, unlike London, unlike
Moving Up.
Moving Up. Yeah. Thank you. Another good one, two-parter. So this is the episode. You can find it. Actually, one remnant of this, if you go back and you look at some of the comments in IMDb, some people even say, well, there was a producer's cut of this where they blah, blah, blah. Mm. Now, what's unique about what we're doing today is we are doing the producer's cut.
We are.
We always favor that. Yep. We have that today. So not only is it a double episode, but it's a double episode producer's cut.
Yeah.
So I think our episode, actually, we've got 52 minutes and 57 seconds to cover, which even if they had aired this as a 1 hour special, that's still a little long math wise for them.
I would agree with that. Yeah. And I think that there have only ever been in the history of Parks and Recreation, there's only been three episodes that were like truly double sized.
Yes.
One, and you've already mentioned them. One is the season six premiere, London.
Right.
The one is the season six finale, Moving Up.
That's correct.
And then the third is this one, of course, One Last Ride.
Yeah.
Of those, only the season six finale and this, the series finale, were double-sized producer's cuts.
Yeah.
So they're massive. Yeah. They're like a mini movie.
And we haven't said it in a while, but if you don't have the DVDs, get them. They're relatively cheap on Amazon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We'll throw an affiliate link on our thing one day and maybe make a nickel. I don't know. That'd be the first nickel this show ever makes. But you know what? I don't care because we love the show.
Well, and not only that, but you know what? Not only are the DVDs probably pretty cheap, but if you don't have a DVD player, pick one up at Goodwill for $5. Like, you know, they're really cheap anymore.
That is so true. Yeah. I hadn't even thought of that. Now, I am waiting. One day I'm going to gift you my DVDs because I'm going to buy the Blu-rays just to put them on a shelf and never touch them again.
Nice.
I don't know why I'd do that. But we subscribe to Peacock, and that's what I would recommend everybody because they do have the producer's cut. Mm. They have this full 52-minute, 57-second version. You can go find it. In fact, it's rather difficult to find anything else officially outside of those DVDs.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. So,
and that's kind of, it's a benefit of the world we live in. It's also a downside. If you're a traditionalist, you want to go say, I want to watch the 22 and a half minute, half hour version of this. Mm. Good luck.
Yeah.
I don't think it exists. Now, but you did review both editions of this, producers
I
and
did.
Standard.
I did.
So I'm hoping, because I did not, and I usually do, but I was just lazy or busy or something, or maybe both.
Yeah.
I was belazy. And I'm going to need
new
you.
New word.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a new word. Belazy. Mm. You're going to need to help us understand the distinctions when you think it's appropriate.
Oh, I'm going to, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good deal. Mark, this episode was directed. This is so apropos for me. Like, if you're going to say, Alan, how would you end the series?
And I have.
You have. And we've said, well, not like this.
No.
No. But in all seriousness, I would say Mike Schur should be the director.
Yeah.
Maybe Greg Daniels. But I think Mike Schur's a little better in this case. It was Mike's show.
Yes. Greg Daniels has his place in the on the podium of honor.
Well,
but
God,
Mike Schur's got to take the top.
I bet he gets
the golden megaphone.
He, that's exactly right. Mike gets the golden megaphone and the golden pen in this case, co golden pens, Mike Schur and Amy Poehler.
Perfect. 10.
Yeah. we're done. Thanks everybody for joining.
See, and 10. You guys thought we were just going to go on and on about this.
Oh, I fear we might.
Bore you for a treat.
Yeah, I do think we've talked about this and we should probably tell our viewer, Ted, if you're listening.
Listen up.
This is a pretty big chunk. We've already said it, 53 minutes roughly. Mm-hmm. We're probably going to take a break today.
No way.
And stop our coverage and pick this up and do a second part that we'll release next week.
No way. I went to a little boys' room before this. I'm ready to go. We're going to do like 5 hours on this, right?
God, I hope not. But and I'm sure Ted is really looking forward to us not doing that as well.
Ted likes it when we blather on and on and on. Like he actually likes it when we talk about nonsense that has nothing to do with the show. He's
like,
dude, I want you guys to go on and on about. Can you talk more about the ridiculous robot?
Yeah. Speaking of the ridiculous robot, Mark, we're going to need him today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
One last time.
Is he back there?
So you might want to just go on and turn him on.
All right. Wait, what did you just say?
I said, we're going to need him today.
Yeah. But that's not all you said. You said something, you supplemented it, and you said something else that I don't like with that. What that does mean?
Well, I don't know. I said one last time. It was just a slip. I don't know. I got a weird feeling about today. I don't know what's going on.
You dumb guy. Okay, I'm going to go back here to where Rubens and T lives. Oh, hey, buddy. You can't hear me. I'm going to turn you on. All right, you ready? You cover your stuff.
My stuff is covered. Turn on my friend Rubens and T.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. 1, 2, 3.
Bro Bonstantine.
Awesome.
All right, Kate, come on
Hey, buddy.
Here, little buddy. You oil yourself because you're kind of squeaking.
Did you know Robonstantine and I? We bonded a little bit during the that
we don't
incident.
Talk. Yeah, I know. Look, you
we
guys,
call it the Markident, but
look,
yeah,
I'll say it like this: you guys really did a great job carrying the show.
Well, it wasn't much of a show. It was more of just an informational bit we did to tell people that we would be back and we were sorry that it had taken us so long to get here. But
yeah,
we had our reasons.
We had our reasons.
Mostly Mark.
It was mostly me. I admit it. Yeah. So, hey, Robonstantine, thank you for you and Alan did the thing there. I'm so glad you're friends now. It's great.
Well, hey, Mark, I'll tell you what. Let's pretend this is a normal show because it is to some degree.
Sure.
Let's talk about our synopsises really quick.
All right. All right. Well,
because this is a little bit weird. We've had some weird ones with the Johnny Karate Show. We have, you know,
yeah.
I feel like we're ending on a high note. I think we'll see. We'll talk about that. But it's also a little bit of a weird note.
It is. You want me to launch into mine and how I did
it?
Yeah,
please.
Okay. So here's the deal, man.
Yeah.
I had two ways I could go with this. Okay. I could just say there's one huge story and try to describe what the heck I mean by that.
Yeah.
Or I could say there's like 19 stories.
I don't think either of those is right.
Well, then you're going to be disappointed by what I did because I chose either left or right. And the way I went is I went with, you know, the A story, if you will, is called One Last Ride / Everyone's Stories.
Okay.
So that was the way I went. I was tempted to also say there's something about the swing, but that's so minuscule. I just went, nah. It's just like, here we go.
It's a mechanism.
So what I said for this was, as Leslie and the gang face their last day together in Pawnee before everyone goes their own ways, one final little job crosses their path, fixing a broken swing. Mundane though it may seem, Leslie throws herself into it with her typical level of gusto, convincing the rest of the gang to band together to do this one last task. In the process of going through the necessary motions to get the swing fixed, we do deep dives into every single person, including time jumps into their futures, so we can see how things turned out for them. What will happen? Will they get the swing fixed? Will everyone get the story they want? Can Mark and Alan make it through this last episode review? Stay tuned to find out. ...
Nice job.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a great overview. And that's enough because there's no way that covers everything very well.
It does.
I think we thought your official answer was going to be two stories. Because that's the right answer, by the way.
Oh, dear.
So, but
well, you know what, judges, you do what you want. I'm out of here. You're right.
Like, One Last Ride is the name of the episode. And it's like, you know, we normally do our little fake titles and fun.
Well, what did the judges say? Just curious.
They said two.
Well, so what? Go on.
But I think they said it the way you said it. You just didn't quantify that it's two, not one.
Oh, what did they say was the second story?
The future.
What is the other story?
Today. One Last Ride.
Oh.
So it's the connective tissue of the episode.
Yeah, I like that connective tissue.
This premise that we'll get into in a minute that some dude wants a swing set fixed. No one works at Parks anymore. But I started to say Amy. But Leslie says, hey, because in typical Leslie fashion, which I'm sure you'll talk about, she wants to like, it's the last day. So she wants to go over everything that's ever happened.
You know what?
She changes her focus and said, you know what? No, let's do one thing together and make it about our future, which I loved. I thought that was nice.
I actually like the way you said it because like we've had episodes before where let's say the A story serves as a hub for most, if not all of
spoken
the other
wheels,
stories to spring out from. And when I think about it, this is no different. So
I agree.
I like the way I put it, but yeah, well done.
I think your description of it's right. I think, but you could call it two stories.
Yup.
And my titles were One Last Ride, because you can't improve on that.
Right,
it is the perfect title.
NBC, you finally did a good job.
Yeah. It took you 124 episodes, but good job.
You did it.
You
did it. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
USA.
World's best cup of coffee. You did it, guys.
Yeah, I love Elf.
And the B story, looking forward. Like, you're just, it's.
That's pretty
you
good.
You can make up weird, funny titles, but that's it.
Yeah.
We're going to get to learn what happens to all of our friends today.
Yuppity, yup, yup.
And next week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe we power through it. Maybe we do 5 hours.
Dear God. All right. So anyway.
Ted, call in. Just tell us. Tell Alan.
Yeah. The hotline's open, Ted. We're waiting for your call.
No one ever calls.
No one ever calls. No. Might have something to do with us never being live, but you never know.
What are we right now?
We're live.
Yeah. So.
The name of our show is Live from Pawnee. We've never been live. Mm. Not a single time.
God, that's a problem. Like, that's a marketing issue.
It hit me on episode 123, and it was too late.
We're realizing this now. We're at the end of the pot. We need to. We are not good at this.
We're terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I've been told.
Well, what we're lacking in finance, we're going to make up in volume.
Clearly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then our show runs long, too.
What do we do after the synopsis?
I see what I did there.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
What do we do? AKAs then?
We normally do an AKA.
Is that what we're doing at this time?
If you want to.
All right.
I didn't do one.
Did you not really? No, you're a big liar.
Actually, no, I'm not a big liar. I really struggled to pick an AKA from this episode. One, I don't want to go into too much about why, because I think we'll talk about that probably in our scores and such. Is it a funny episode? Yes. Is it one of those funny, funny, funny episodes where every zinger is a good AKA candidate? No, it's really not.
I would agree with that.
And I think that's why I struggled. And, you know, I don't know.
Well, see what you thought of mine.
I want to hear yours.
Because I agree with your.
Because if it's really good, I'm going to say that was mine too.
Of course you are. I like your assessment and I agree with that.
Yeah.
So I had one that I just thought was very sweet.
Yeah, what stood out to you? Oh, sweet. I didn't consider sweet.
So it's Leslie. Yeah. And at a certain point she says, and I think she says it to Ben, but she's musing about the gang. Mm. And she says, and I quote,
"Yeah,
that's all I want. All of these people in the same place at the same time."
Perfect. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. I did write that down. That was my AKA.
I knew it.
So weird.
That's you.
I couldn't find. Here, paper shuffle noise, paper shuffle noise. I couldn't find it, but
God
I just found
Foley
it.
Thank sound effects. Yeah, yeah. Well done.
Yeah, yeah. Our sound guy will fix that later.
Yeah. Good thing we have a time machine for you to go back and actually do that.
That's not
a bad AKA.
That's a really good AKA. Yeah. And it's apropos of the tone of this episode,
right,
which I think is sweeter than funny. But that doesn't take away from the show. I'll just say that.
I agree with you. Yeah, right. Well said.
Okay. Well, hey, Mark,
what?
I think with that said, it is time to do the breakdown and do our thing here.
So, yeah, Alan, let's start the breakdown of the final. Oh, the final episode. I'm
fine. Hold it together, Mark.
I'm fine. It's easy.
You're good enough. You're strong enough, Mark. You got this.
I've been told that. Okay. So we start at the cold open, a very good place to start, right? And this time, the series final episode at City Hall.
Yep.
And it looks like it's early morning, and we see Leslie standing in the entrance to the old Parks and Rec department, now headed by Craig, right? Facing towards the bullpen, and we see Ben walk up beside her. Hey, little buddy, Robonstantine, you there? Hey, all right. Okay, play our cold open, please. Thank you, sir.
Can't believe you got everyone to show up this early.
Well, today is the last day we'll all be together. I need to savor every moment we have left. I brought comfort food, scrapbooks, and tissues.
Good Lord. Mm.
Well, today should be perfect.
It's a palette.
And any perfect day involves crying uncontrollably.
Yeah, sure does.
Which brings us to 2005. Mm. The Circle Park renovation was complete, and a young man named Thomas Haverford was still 2 years away from getting hired. Hmm.
Perhaps we could skip ahead and just hit the highlights?
I mean, I planned a comprehensive retrospective, but I guess I can just focus on the really important moments. Ah, the debate about getting a pod-based coffee machine. Gary and I wrote a little musical number about that, and it goes a little something.
Why can't we just quickly shake hands, pretend we liked each other, and get out of here?
I'm all for that.
No, April, Ron, we need to celebrate everything that we've done together as a group. Hmm. This is our last day here. Who knows when we'll all be together like this again?
Excuse me. Hi. There's a swing in a park near my house that's been broken for about 3 months. Is it possible to get that fixed?
Anything is possible if you follow your dreams. Johnny Karate.
Except getting a swing fixed. None of us actually work here anymore. Come back in 2 hours when the office is open.
Thank you.
Wait. Actually, sir, we can help. We can, and we will. Because when we used to work here, helping people was our job. Forget about these old stories. Let's make a new one. Let's fix a swing. One last ride for the Parks and Rec gang. Who's in?
Yeah!
The vote was 4-3. Donna said to get rid of me, but Ron was suspicious because my coffee was delicious.
Come on, Gary. You're the mayor now. Have some dignity.
Oh, boy. Now, the end of that was a little bit of a visual where apparently, you know, there where you see Jerry start singing, where you hear him rather.
Yeah.
He dances his way into the room. He's dressed up like a coffee, like an orange
giant coffee pot.
I love it. But an orange one, which carries the decaf.
Yeah,
so
is
the
decaf.
Evil one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where
that's why I didn't recognize it.
Well, it must have been, because who needs that nonsense?
It's crazy.
You gotta be self-hating, like a vegetarian. I mean, that was kind of funny.
I thought it was very funny.
Which, by the way, we haven't said what's powering us this morning is our delicious,
Official, Arbex. Unofficial sponsor?
Yes, the Arbex coffee.
Arbex.
I have the blueberry something or other going this morning.
That's a blueberry crumble donut.
Holy crap, that's good.
Yeah, I thought I'm having the same thing. I'm just having maybe a little less donut in it.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you're having the same thing, but just in a smaller size?
Was it going to say it that way?
Yeah, well done. Yeah. Just go ahead and tap on the minefield. That's fine.
Mark, I like it. It's so the stage is set for one last adventure.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think that's apropos then. So
I do too.
And you know, from here, Mark, we kick off the main episode with the gang still in the bullpen and Leslie rallying the troops, trying to figure out exactly how they need to go about helping repair this swing for this one last ride for the Parks gang before they all go their separate ways.
Yeah, that's right. So as you said, Alan, we're still in City Hall. We're still in the bullpen. We pick right back up with Leslie and the gang, with Leslie now trying to figure out what their next steps will be for this broken swing thing.
That's right.
At first, Leslie thinks that they might be roadblocked for lack of getting the required form, because on account of we're in the future, the distant future here, Alan, and they're all paperless now, like you are in the future, and
they need one of them. What was it? The Parks and Rec equipment requisition forms.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, because that's paper. We don't do paper anymore, and no one has login for the computer because no one actually works for the Parks and Rec department anymore.
Funny.
But Donna comes through with a physical copy of the form that she got from one of Leslie's many scrapbooks that she created.
You get the name of it? Thanks, Form the Memories.
Yeah, that's right. So Leslie then approaches Donna fondly and tells her, you know what, how much I appreciate you and how much I'm going to miss you. And the two of them hug. And this starts like a transition of sorts. So now we see the words Seattle 2023 on screen and then see Donna, the realtor, showing a couple around a large, fancy house. It's 3,400 square feet, a beautiful view of Puget Sound. And apparently there's something around the Space Needle called the Space Haystack, which is,
I love that.
It's interesting. But this couple is just gangbusters about this house. Like, she is apparently good at her job, but apparently the Seattle real estate market is hot.
Hot.
So I think they're going to buy it. Robonstantine, play that clip.
Wow. It sold in 2 hours.
You cannot beat the Seattle real estate market. I think it's all that coffee and legal marijuana has people wanting to buy houses quickly and irrationally. Mm. But the giant commission check has me thinking about Donna Joe Adventure Quest.
Ooh, where are we going? Well, it can't be last year. I mean, Middle Korea is so beautiful.
Here's my idea. The Amazon.
Oh?
3 weeks of the best and most expensive places South America has to offer.
I love it. Honestly, with the way work is going, I just need this right now. The school cut the math club. And math. They just don't teach math anymore.
Oh, my poor little do-gooder teacher baby. Why don't we cuddle up on the couch, watch a movie, and then maybe later, I'll wear that little red thing.
Ooh.
Yes, the red thing. Here, let me get this.
Call Satan's niece.
Hey, what do you want?
Wow, Mark. So I have this straight. just I want to make sure we understand the premise of how this is working.
Sure.
So everything is happening in real time in the bullpen, but every time Leslie touches somebody, we're going to kind of Wayne's World our way to the future and get a look at what it holds for them.
I think that's accurate. Now, we're not saying that Leslie has like magic powers like a genie.
Right.
Like
right,
she
right.
isn't forcing time jumps to happen. But in the interest of creative exposition, that I seems like that. To be the launch point yeah. from which these time jumps start.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what's Satan's niece got to say?
So, man.
What's happening here?
What is she ever not able
to
say?
I love that, Satan's niece.
I do too. So at this point, you know, Donna's called Satan's niece there. So we have a small transition to Donna's house after April shows up. So it's like later that night, we see April and Donna. Now, apparently Donna invited April over. They're now sitting together on the couch or at the table, I think. And Donna's showing April some of their vacation pictures on her grizzle thingy.
That's what they're called.
And that's what they're called. And then just then Joe walks into the room, sees April, cheerfully welcomes her and asks, hey, like, what are you doing there? And Donna tells Joe to sit down with them and proceeds to tell Joe that she'd like to finally treat Joe self and do something for him. And yeah. he's like, oh, I could leather handbags. I can't get enough of them. And then he said, no. And April then takes over and explains that Donna's going to take some of the money that they usually use on their Donna Joe adventure quest trips. And with that money, establish an education program through April's foundation. And April and Donna then use the to show Joe pictures and words describing what the idea is. And in a nutshell, the program is called Teach Yourself.
I love it.
Where Joe and all the other teachers will get money for an after-school program like music, art, math, whatever. We see Joe's eyes light up as he's clearly excited by the idea, but he also takes a moment to remind Donna, like, yeah, I love the trips. And you know what? This is your money and you should do what you want with it. And Donna smiles him and says, look, I've had lots of adventures. Like I've single-handedly started the door knocker earring trend. I came in ninth in Italy's Got Talent. I served on a NASCAR pit crew.
Dear God.
Now I'm ready for a new type of adventure. And I want to take it with you. This is what I want to do with the money. That's very sweet.
I love it.
So Donna and Joe smile at each other and then start to kiss. And then April goes, it's time for me to leave, I think. And as Donna and Joe kiss, we then see a transition begin as we go back to City Hall at the present in 2017, and we see the end of Leslie's embrace with Donna.
Love it. Teach yourself. I love it. Yeah. I really do hope that math, you know, doesn't have to become an after school activity. That would be kind of tragic.
I agree.
It's interesting to consider the Parks and Recs, kind of future state visions and what's happened and what hasn't. So far, the DMZ in Korea still exists and is not yet a tourist destination, but maybe one day.
Maybe one day. You never know.
Yeah. Well, I love it. So we're back in the bullpen and just in time to spoil a sweet moment between Leslie and Donna. Enter Craig, for both self-affirmations to calm his rage and questions about just exactly what people are doing in his office.
All the things. Yes. Like you said, so we're still in the city hall, still in the bullpen right after Leslie and Donna finish their embrace. Craig walks in and has a minor freak out about all these unexpected people in his office because
why are you here?
And the mess, the associated mess that's with you people. But then he calms himself. I'm Craig and I'm fine. And Leslie explains to Craig that this is their one last job, kind of explains the concept and says, you know, Craig, you could really expedite things because you're the head of the Parks and Rec department now. You're the Ron Swanson 2.0. And I'm a good singer. And Craig, to see if Craig can expedite things by signing the requisition form. And as Craig signs it, Leslie tells him, while she at first, she didn't know how to read him. Mm. But at the end of the day, she's really glad that they're leaving the Parks Department in his hands. And at this, Leslie and Craig smile and they shake hands, have a nice moment together.
Let me guess.
Exactly. Nice. Triggering another Wayne's World type transition as we prepare to tell Craig's story. We then find ourselves at Tom's Bistro in 2019 and then see and hear Craig singing at a microphone to the audience. Pretty good voice, too.
He's got a great voice.
As Craig finishes, the audience applauds and Tom walks up to Craig to congratulate him on his nice job singing. And he then tells Craig that gentleman over there by the bar sent you over this glass of wine and his business card. And I can't do that. And then Tom hands Craig a business card, which just says, Typhoon.
Oh, I love it.
And Craig looks over at the bar, and sure enough, we see Ron's new barber, Typhoon yeah. sitting there at the bar, looking at Craig, raising his glass. And Craig looks like maybe he's resisting a little bit, but then he like reluctantly gives in and says, okay, fine.
Well, you know what that's like in reference to? Like previously, Typhoon came up to Craig.
Yeah.
And he's like,
oh, that was at Don and Joe's wedding.
It was Don and Joe's wedding. And he's like, all right, but not right now. Like, oh. He's like, you know, I'll get back to you.
Right. So right.
I think he's getting back to him.
All right. You know what? That's yeah. a great observation. Yeah. That's fair. So then we have another, I guess, transition to yeah. sometime in the future, unspecified.
Their future.
But right? yeah, I would, that yeah. would say so.
We're future bounding here.
We're future bounding, and we see Craig and Typhoon getting married by, is it clergyman Horatio Sands?
I believe it is.
I didn't know they were even good friends. That's pretty either. Cool. Anyway.
Horatio Sands, played by Horatio Sands.
As Horatio Sands, the clergyman, starts, Craig mentions to Typhoon that he's really scared, but Typhoon calms him down. And when Horatio Sands, the clergyman, asks for the best man to present the rings, well, who should we see approach? But Ron freaking Swanson himself. And Ron walks up behind Typhoon and gives him the rings and puts his hand affectionately on Typhoon's shoulder and gives him a big smile and then looks up at both of them and says, good luck, you two.
Nice.
That hit great. Me harder than I expected.
I know. It was a sweet moment.
And then we have our final transition in Craig's story. And this time we see ourselves transported to sometime way in the future.
They've substantially aged them for this scene.
Yes. 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 Like yeah. we're talking like elderly Jerry.
Yeah. Age. Gray hair. Yeah.
And
maybe not 99-year-old Jerry. Close.
We see Craig and Typhoon taking what looks like a futuristic ride together in a Wonder Woman style plane with transparent sides.
Love it.
They are both now very old, but still very much in love. And we learn two last things. A, their plane trip apparently is for their anniversary. And B, after hearing a smidgen of banter between Craig and Typhoon, it is obvious that they both still have their same patterns, Typhoon being very sweet, Craig occasionally lapsing into his semi-yelling self when expressing strong opinions. As Craig finishes his complaining, Typhoon laughs good-naturedly as if expecting nothing less from his longtime husband. And then a transition starts to take us back.
Nice. This trout smells like fish. Or something like that.
Crazy Craig.
Crazy Craig. Mm. Yeah. I don't know if I want to fly in planes that you can see through the walls, but you know.
No, that's a nightmare. You know, I've done that with elevators.
Yeah.
And it's
people
not,
don't like elevators, glass no. elevators. My wife doesn't like them.
I refuse.
I think the Wonder Woman plane is an amazing future to imagine, but would probably not be practical for most mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, I agree. I'm
interesting. Well, I'm happy. I'm happy for those guys. I think those two kids might make it. So,
and best man Ron Swanson.
That
how
was
good
terrific.
Is that?
That was terrific.
Yeah.
I love that touch. Well, Mark, back to the bullpen. The business of Operation Fix the Swing must go on. And it looks like Leslie is about to recruit April and Andy. And I'm guessing, only guessing, we might get a sneak peek at their future.
It could. No one can say. But let's see if we can say.
Yeah, go on and say.
So the transition finishes. We find ourselves back in Pawnee 2017. We see Leslie and Craig finish their handshake and Craig walks off. Leslie mentions that she now needs to file the newly signed requisition form up on the fourth floor.
Wow.
At which point April and Andy the fourth floor. Oh, we love the fourth floor. It's creepy and it's awesome.
Yeah.
And they join her and then Andy even calls shotgun, even though it's just the elevator, but he calls shotgun. So then they cut to the fourth floor. So they rode up there. And we now see Leslie and April and Andy walk into Ethel Beaver's
love
office.
It. Love Ethel.
And as I love Ethel, love Helen Slayton Hughes. As Leslie asks Ethel to file the form, April and Andy muse out loud over the things they're going to miss. For April, it's like the disturbing murals and the ominous lighting and the creepy people. Cue camera jump over to punching bag Kyle sitting at his desk. And for Andy, it's the Pawnee food like Taco Bell, KFC, Pizza Hut, but also Leslie.
That's a restaurant. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Leslie tries to remind him all those things, including her, are still going to be in Washington,
That's
D.C.
True.
And, you know, not really sure it sunk in because sweet, stupid Andy.
It's sweet, stupid
anyway,
Andy.
Anyway, Leslie then takes that opportunity to have a nice moment with them, saying they are about to embark on an amazing adventure. And whatever happens, she and Ben will always be there for April and Andy.
Aww.
And Leslie then walks up to both of them and hugs them. And as she does,
Bloop.
Another transition starts.
Yep.
Robonstantine? Yeah, play the rest of this clip, pretty please.
Agent Macklin, I need you.
Ooh.
Some thieves are trying to steal the legendary snake called Sapphire.
What the? No! That Sapphire has the power to activate the Cuban Missile Crisis. These Snake Hole, listen to me very carefully. You are in grave danger. In order to survive, you must do everything I tell you.
Damn it, Macklin! I love it when you take charge. I must have you. I know it's against protocol, but make love to me, you fool! You animal!
Wait, seriously? Because I will go do that right now. Okay, rain check that, all right? They're here.
Tree by tree!
Oh, look at them! Here you are, you little monsters! I love this. You guys are the best.
My love, we have to go. Just put all the candy in a bowl or something.
Uh-oh.
What's wrong? Did you eat all the candy?
No!
Did you?
Yes, but that's not what's wrong. It's just seeing all those kids out there. Babe, I want to put a babe in you, babe.
Andy, you know where I stand on this.
Yes, I would love all the awesome stuff my body would go through. I mean, if all it meant was puking and getting weird stretch marks and veins everywhere, then sign me up. But at the end, we've brought a child into the world. That's disgusting.
No, they wipe all of the disgusting stuff off of it immediately. I want a little April. Or even a little boy April.
I know, I just can't wrap my head around it.
We're gonna be late for dinner.
Okay.
Let's go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think we may revisit that here.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, no matter what they do, I think those kids are going to make it, Mark. And we now bounce back to where we most recently finished, still in the future of 2022. And April and Andy have now arrived at Ben and Leslie's house in D.C.
Right, right. So this is kind of a continuance of April and Andy's future story, if you will.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's half an hour later because of travel.
Yeah, it's just travel time to Leslie and Ben's house because we're still in Washington, D.C., 2022. We now see April and Andy at Leslie and Ben's house. They all greet each other and comment on everyone's costume. Of course, April and Andy are Janet Snakehole and Burt Macklin, respectively. Leslie is Sandra D. O'Connor.
That's so fun.
Waggedy, maggedy do. And then Ben is the Lamplighter, a character from his new board game sequel, Cones of Dunshire, Winds of Tremora, which Gameplay magazine called punishingly intricate. Andy then wants to know where the triplets are. Where their kids are on account of he wants to wrestle all of them at the same time.
Yeah,
and then Ben tells them, well, they're trick-or-treating in Georgetown with some friends, and it's just grown-ups tonight, no kids. And Andy gets a pained look on his face, and he slumps way
I love how you can't see what's in Andy's mind.
Yeah. And he's visibly upset. And then noticing this, Ben, he's smooth. Yeah. He asks, he goes, Andy, could you help me with something in the kitchen? You know, on account of now he has a chance to talk to him. And then in the kitchen, Ben asks, like, so what's going on, man? Is April still like unsure about having kids? And Andy says, well, yeah. And I'm a little freaked out because I really, really want them. And Ben tries to reassure Andy, telling him April will eventually get there. But Andy's worried, like, well, what if she doesn't? Like, what would that mean? Back in the living room, April tells Leslie, all right, go ahead. And Leslie's like, what do you mean? Like, go ahead and start lecturing me about how me and Andy should have kids. Like, they're so great and they change your life and blah, 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 blah. And how it's unfair because on account of Leslie, you and Ben, you just happen to hit the jackpot with your kids because they're all smart and great and healthy and they're really cool. And your life with Ben is perfect. But look, my life with Andy is perfect already. And the kids are opposite of their parents. And that's why.
Well, they only had sex one time.
Yeah, one time. Yeah. Because that's, And so, and Leslie and Ben are lame, granted, but that's why, because the kids are opposite.
Sure,
so their kids are cool. But she and Andy are pretty cool. So that means then
the kids might be lame.
It's a danger. It's a real danger. And lame and weird. And then April finally breaks down and asks Leslie, what should I do? And Leslie smiles and tells April, having kids isn't about filling a gap in your lives or trying to make your lives perfect. It's about you and your partner being a team and wanting to bring in some new team members. And when April presses Leslie for a yes, no answer, Leslie says, I don't know if you should have kids. I really don't. But I do like your team.
Aw.
That's nice.
That's sweet. I love that. Well, and you know, I mean, that this is a conversation, I think, now between two friends, Leslie and April, which is really nice, right? It used to be something different, but I feel like they are, even though Leslie's a mentor to April, and I think always will be, I think they're friends now.
And that's the differentiation that I was going to call out, because I agree with what you just said with the caveat that just because people are on equal levels, one can still be mentor to another.
Well, yeah, in many aspects.
Right.
Just because of life experience or lack thereof in this case, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Mark, I think we're going to jump even farther into the future, correct? Why don't you go on and set up here what's about to happen?
Sure thing. So we're still telling April and Andy's story.
Yep.
We're not done with it yet.
Yeah.
In the last scene, April and Andy were at Leslie and Ben's house on Halloween in Washington, D.C., 2022.
Right.
Now, we transition to 1 year later, Halloween 2023.
Ah.
And we're now back in Pawnee. And the first thing we see is that we're at Ann Perkins Hospital. I mean, St. Joseph's Hospital. Yes. It's always going to be
Ann Perkins Hospital. Ann Perkins Hospital.
And we see Dr. Lou Saperstein dressed in surgical scrubs.
Ooh.
Hey, Robonstantine, play the rest of April and Andy's story.
All right, Miss Ludgate, we're getting close.
Babe, you look more beautiful right now than I've ever seen you.
Oh, holy hell.
Wow. Just your luck that you're going into labor on Halloween. Can I get a warm towel to get that makeup off?
No, I want it on. That's the whole point. I put the makeup on after I went into labor.
Whatever blows your skirt up. Okay. You ready to push?
Wait, no, babe, my birth mix.
Oh, come on.
Perfect. Here comes a contraction. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready. Let's do this.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the mash.
A little bit later.
Aww.
Burt Macklin Jr.?
We need a Halloween angle. How about Demon Spawn Baby Satan Dwyer?
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Or maybe Burt Snakehole Ludgate Karate Dracula Macklin Demon Jack-O-Lantern Dwyer. We call him Jack for short.
What a beautiful baby.
His name is Jack.
Strong name.
Love it.
Listen, when you get a chance, would you sign these documents for me? I'll be back.
Oh, hey, hold on a sec. Dr. S.
Yes.
Hey, it says on here that the baby was born November 1st, 12:06 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could change that to 11:59 on Halloween.
No can do. You know, I'm a doctor. I have certain ethical responsibilities.
Yeah, I get it. It's just that Halloween is very important to my wife. So could you please just mark down that the baby was born on Halloween? I'll give you a good review on Yelp.
I can't.
Doctor, listen to me very carefully. I don't know who you are or what you want, but I have a particular set of skills. Skills that I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you.
Is that the monologue from Taken?
My son was born on Halloween, do you understand?
Yes, I do.
That's awesome, thank you.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yes.
Hey, hi, oh, I wanna scream, but I don't wanna wake up my godchild. I'm assuming it's my godchild, right? We can talk about it later.
Congrats, guys. I know it came unexpectedly early, but pretty cool he was born in Pawnee. Where do I put these? I have so many presents, it's weird.
Yes! Oh, for the baby? Just put him over there.
What's his name?
Jack.
Oh, that's good. Welcome to the team, little guy.
Aww.
Oh, I love it. I love that, Mark. Well, following another lovely moment between Leslie and April, we now jump back to the fourth floor in 2017 and catch up with everyone's favorite, bureaucrat with red tape, Miss Beavers. You are missed, but get to live rent-free in my head for the rest of my life. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. With April and Andy's story now done, we transition back to the present in 2017, where, as you said, we see Leslie ending her nice moment on the fourth floor with April and Andy. Ethel Beavers stamps Leslie's document, hands it back to her, and tells her to take it down to maintenance. And we then hear Leslie musing aloud who she wants to accompany her for that. We then cut, 10 minutes later or something, to the first floor where we see Leslie and Tom talking as they walk down the hallway.
But who thought it was going to be them? It was Kyle.
Probably.
Yeah, we haven't seen Kyle in, a year more?
Yeah.
And he's back for the finale. I love that. Yeah, punching bad Kyle.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He punched himself this time, I think.
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah. He's the only one that Jerry could punch.
That's true.
He's lower on the rung, which just makes me giddy even saying
it. We needed that character.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we cut to the first floor. We see Leslie and Tom talking as they walk down the hallway, and the hallway full of murals, no doubt.
It is the mural hallway. Yes.
I like that.
Yeah. We haven't seen them in a while.
I agree. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we see John Ralphio roll out in a wheelchair to meet Leslie and Tom, surprising them both. And when Leslie tells him that, hey, this is our last day in Pawnee, John Ralphio gets up out of the wheelchair. Oh, for reals? And walks over to Leslie and hugs her and maybe smells her hair too. LOL and yuck.
Yeah.
And then tells Leslie he's going to really miss her, partially because he's on her family phone plan somehow. But still, after a few additional lines of prolonged John Ralphio style insanity, Leslie addresses him seriously, telling him, although I truly hope that I never see you again, I do wish you a long and happy life. And we then see Leslie smile and affectionately put her hand on John Ralphio's shoulder. And we see another transition start, which resolves into a partial blank screen, this time with the words John Ralphio, along with a picture of Entertainment 720's old logo, and then zooming in to a portion of the screen that will tell John Ralphio's story, this time in Pawnee in the year 2022. We cut to an outside shot of a cemetery. We see a headstone that says, John Ralphio Saperstein, 1985-2022. And we join what appears to be John Ralphio's funeral in progress, being led by Rabbi Kurt Lerpus.
Love it.
Hey, Robonstantine, play John Ralphio's funeral, please.
Today we say goodbye to John Ralphio Saperstein. As per his last will and testament, we will now listen to his favorite song, Bend Over by Lil Jon, featuring Tyga.
Bend over, make your knees touch your elbows. Bend over, make your knees touch your elbows.
Dear God.
Oh, what do we see there?
Okay. They bought it. Do you have the insurance money?
No, let's hit it, bro.
Time to start a casino in Tajikistan.
I'm
talking about Tajikistan.
This is the best idea you've ever had.
No. This is God's idea. I'm just the vessel. You sneak out of here. Do not be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious.
Don't be suspicious.
So we come back from that, whatever that was. Uh-huh. I guess that's John Ralphio's story.
Yeah.
And we come back from the transition. Leslie is finishing her nice moment with John Ralphio. And then she and Tom continue walking down the hallway. And before they get out of earshot, John Ralphio calls out to Leslie one last time. And Leslie turns around to look at him. And he pauses and he says, I've always loved you. To which Leslie says, I know. And she and Tom continue on, and John Ralphio smiles to himself, and he jumps in the air and does a happy fist pump.
Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
I love that.
All right. That's as good an ending as he's going to get, I think.
It was a great ending for John Ralphio.
Yeah.
And there was no way we were not going to play that today.
Like, no.
Just no way.
No.
Like, I've been waiting 7 years to play that clip. So. I have to be honest, this one kind of shocked me. I didn't see that coming, but it's very sweet. And
you mean him declaring his love
for Leslie?
I have a note on that later.
Okay, good.
That's good. Extremely interesting, I thought.
Oh, okay. Mm. Well, good. Well, Mark, apparently we continue down this hallway of horror still in 2017. And this next one, well, I might have seen that one coming. Why don't you tell us what happens?
Okay.
Not the painting. I didn't see the painting coming. But anyway.
No. As Leslie and Tom continue walking down the hallway, they encounter Leslie's frenemy, Councilman Jeremy Jam.
Mr. Jam.
And he stops Leslie to give his bestie a parting gift before she leaves Pawnee. A painting of himself and Leslie in sort of a parody slash homage to the 1981 Rolling Stones magazine cover, which featured a nude John Lennon curled up beside a clothed Yoko Ono.
Oh, my God.
LOL. Yuck.
Yeah.
Neither Leslie or Tom know exactly how to react to the to that. But Leslie Gracious.
Wait a minute, who's who in this painting?
Leslie's the Yoko Ono one.
Oh, dear God. Mm-hmm. That means Jam is naked.
Yeah.
Okay.
We just move on. And to Leslie's credit, she graciously takes it. I mean, I don't know what she's going to do with it, but let's get out of that moment, right?
I want a copy.
She graciously takes the painting and says, you know what? In a way, I'm going to miss you too, Jam. Good luck with whatever you decide to do. And we see Leslie put an affectionate hand on Jam's arm, and we start another transition into the future, which resolves into a partial blank screen, this time with the word Jam, along with a picture, a logo of Jam Orthodontics, and zooming into a portion of the screen that will now tell Jam's story, this time in Florida in the year 2020. And we cut to Jam at a hibachi station.
Oh my God.
Apparently cooking Japanese food for his customers gathered around the table. And we see and hear Jam do several moves and sounds typical of what one might expect from a hibachi station before. Before finally gracefully slipping a piece of shrimp into his pocket with a triumphant, hey, and then everybody applauds on account of the shrimp is in his pocket. And then Jam bows to each one of them and thanks. Arigato, Daytona Beach. So you know what? That's not bad for him.
It's not unexpected. Him winding up in Florida fits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know he loves doing that.
He does do it. Yeah, we've seen this at his house. He has a hibachi grill in his house.
Yeah.
$5,000. Well, it was a steal.
I mean, I'm saying. We then see the transition start back to City Hall in the present 2017. We see Leslie finishing her nice moment with Jam. With a dramatic pause, Jam tells Leslie, hey, be good. And Leslie, not sure what to make of this, goes, okay. And then they look at each other for a few seconds. And then Jam, unless I'm mistaken, he very, very slowly, like he starts to lean in. This is our final moment. I'm going to lean in and I'm going to give you a kiss. And Leslie just looks at him like, no. And
he's having that inner dialogue, are we about to kiss moment? Mm-hmm. And Leslie's having her inner dialogue, no, we're not
in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. And then, you know, and then Jam gets the picture and clears his throat embarrassed, and then they all leave.
Dear God.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, following that scene, yuck, and we get back to the bureaucracy at hand, and wouldn't you know it, Mark, the resources needed to move Project Swing Set ahead are currently unavailable. Shocking.
Yeah, that's right. So we now cut to a shot of the doors to the maintenance and supplies where, and it shows their hours of 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Thursday. But also shows that they're closed on Fridays, which this is Friday. So, Leslie seems put out, but Tom assures her that he will solve this problem. No sweat. And Leslie beams at him saying, can I just say, Tom, you've accomplished so much. You've come so far. You're so successful. Yes. And well-dressed. He added that part.
Of course.
I am so very proud of you. And Tom thanks her. And the two of them share a very sweet hug and another transition starts. And this resolves again into a partial blank screen, this time with the word Tom, along with a picture of the Tom's Bistro logo, and then zooming into a portion of the screen that will now tell Tom's story.
What year is it? Does it say?
The screen says Pawnee 2019. And what happens here is we actually cut into the middle of what we already know to be Craig's story.
Yeah.
Specifically the part where Tom walks up to Craig and gives him Typhoon's business card. Yep. Tom hands Craig the card, but instead of the camera staying with Craig the way we did last time, this time the camera follows Tom, who walks into the next room and addresses his senior advisory board consisting of Ben, Ron, and Donna. Tom claps his hands and addresses them all about a huge expansion opportunity that they all know has been presented to Tom's Bistro. Tom asks their opinions one at a time, starting with Ben, who Tom formally addresses as the accounting nerd. Ben considers for a moment and tells Tom, there will always be risks, but you've done your homework and all the numbers line up, and I think you're good. Tom moves on to Mr. Ron Swanson, who tells Tom, you know, no surprise here. It's a bold capitalistic gambit, son, but nothing ventured, nothing gained. That seems appropriate, right? And then Tom turns to the last member of the board, Ms. Donna Meagle, who we now see is present in a virtual capacity and is talking with the group via a grizzle something or other device named a grizzle
it's,
face.
It's grizzle face as the platform on a grizzle pad.
Oh, dear. Okay, yes. Is that what it is? You're so savvy. And Donna happily chimes in and says, look, really? Real estate's actually pretty cheap right now. If you're going to do it, this is a good time. Mm. And after hearing from everyone, Tom makes a decision. Mm. Hey, Robonstantine, play it, buddy.
Okay, I'm doing it. Over the next 5 years, there's going to be 20 Tom's Bistros across Woo-hoo. America.
Man.
Look out, world. Tommy's about to blow up.
Yeah.
And blow up he did.
Uh-oh.
But not in a good way. He lost everything. Today, Tom Haverford is broke, destitute, and worst of all, swaggerless.
Tommy, you gotta stop watching this.
I can't tear myself away. It's a whole documentary about my failures.
That you made!
I had to. I have to remember every tiny awful aspect of this. I lost everything, Lucy. The franchises, most of my money. I had to sell my pocket square collection. What are people's eyes gonna be drawn to?
Look, you had a tough break. Stock market tanked, credit dried up. Who could have predicted that the country would run out of beef? You just gotta move on.
That's the problem, though. I've gone bust in the past, but it was because I did something reckless. This time, I was smart and careful, and I still went broke.
Interesting.
What do I do now?
Well, you and I are gonna be fine, and you'll come up with a new idea. You always do.
I like that scene. A couple things. So you saw he's watching the British documentary that he clearly narrated himself and made himself to make himself miserable.
Yeah.
Do you notice how the TV screen had graphics, but then there were graphics floating outside of the TV in three dimensions?
Yeah, it's Grizzle technology there, baby.
Actually, it's real. It's happening now.
Get out of here.
No, at the D23, the Disney 23 Expo in Anaheim last week, they actually showed, and what I've been reading about is this digital projection technology where it's in 3D, but you don't need glasses.
You telling me Grizzle technology is becoming a reality?
I don't know about the little transparent hand thingies. I started to say hand job, but let's not call it that. Hand thingies carry around. But the 3D technology, yes, is actually a real thing. I think in the next 2 or 3 years, we'll start to see this in theme parks and maybe even in movie theaters. I don't know yet.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Sorry about that. We'll edit that out later. But anyway. Yeah. But Mark, I do have two questions first.
What
will people's eyes be drawn to? That is an amazing question from Tom.
Yeah, I don't know.
And where is the beef? Thank you.
No one I'm here will ever know.
Yes.
That lady asked it ad infinitum.
She asked that in the 80s and no one's ever been able to answer it.
No, none. Yeah. The only answer I heard was actually part of a limerick that I'm not going to repeat.
Thank you. But please do continue no matter what you do.
Mm. Well, after this scene where I think Lucy is trying to tell him, look, everything's going to be okay. But
yeah.
Tom still looks a little worried. He's definitely down in the dumps. He's taking a gut shot.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So we have another minor transition to sometime later. I'm guessing maybe a week or so, probably
it's
not
near
real
term,
long.
Yeah.
And we cut to Tom talking with Ron at his cabin. And Ron is grousing about how Diane made me install luxury items like a driveway and faucets, but Tom can use his cabin as long as he needs it. Oh, and Ron also hands him a gift basket from Leslie and Ben.
Oh, that's right.
There's no meat though, he checked. And because on account of no beef.
Yeah.
And Tom takes the basket and thanks Ron and tells him, like, you know, Lucy's going to be away on business for a month. So I'm just going to stay here in your cabin. I'm going to clear my head and I'll work on my next big project. And Ron asks him about it. And Tom tells him, I don't know. It's just going to be some kind of blockbuster action film. You know, I don't know what it's going to be about. I don't know the plot. I don't know the story, but a perfect title. Sniper Race Delta Beijing Inferno. And looking unimpressed and a little confused,
yeah.
Ron tells Tom, I know you have had a rough go of it and you can spend your time however you like, but whatever you write is going to have your name on it. Mm. At least make it something you're proud of. Good luck, son.
I like it.
And at that, Ron leaves the cabin and Tom sits down at a table with his Grizzle laptop.
Whatever.
I don't even care anymore. And he then looks over at Leslie and Ben's gift basket and he takes out the card that they sent with it and opens it. And it reads, Tom, here's to you next great success. Love, Leslie and Ben.
Uh-huh.
Tom sets it down, sits there for several seconds, just kind of collecting his thoughts. And then we see him start to type.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how this is going to work out for Tom, but I can tell you, if you gave me Ron's cabin for a few days and some access to Lucky Boy there, I don't know. I think I could finish my book.
Really?
Shut up. That was mean. Mean and nasty.
You know, you're right. Mean and nasty. I apologize.
Yeah.
I'm focusing on your utter failures so I can feel better about my life.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
That's the way I operate, Buster.
Yeah. It's weird how everyone likes to do that. It's like everyone got together and said, let's do that.
Well.
Yeah. Huh. I should be the one in the closet crying, but what I'm not, I'm here.
It's all right. It's a little too soon for that, but okay. If you know, turnabout's fair play, you something or other.
Yeah,
you're a vegetarian. I win.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. So anyway, what does happen with Tom and his book? Please tell us, Mark.
Well, so we have, again, a small transition. We see him typing there at Ron's cabin.
Yeah.
And we have a small transition, and then we hear and eventually see Tom. And again, this is sometime in the undetermined future. If I had to take a guess, 6 months to a year later? Like, not years and years and years.
Enough but time for him to have finished a book, let's say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but not a week.
So not Alan time, not in like 3 years.
No, not like
probably six months.
But
6 months.
So we see Tom giving a talk to a packed auditorium at some undisclosed point in the future. He's on some sort of book tour. Hey, Robonstantine, please play the rest of Tom's story.
I once started an entertainment company. It failed in 4 months. I opened a clothing rental store. I built a restaurant empire. They all failed. But the story of America isn't about second or third chances. It's about fourth, fifth, sixth, 20th, 50th chances. That's how long it took me to get where I am today. Best-selling author of Failure, an American Success Story. As you know, if you've read the book, I've outlined 7 different types of successful people. You can be an Andy, an April, a Ben, a Leslie, a Ron, a Donna, or my personal favorite, a Tom. But what do we definitely not want to be?
A Gary!
That's right. Do not be a Gary.
He's talking about me.
Hey.
Hey, thanks so much for coming, guys.
Are you kidding, Tom? This is incredible. Best-selling book, a 40-city tour.
Well, I couldn't have done it without you.
Well, the book's called Failure. I don't know how to take that.
I'm serious. You guys have always supported me. Here, I inscribed you a copy.
When I think of success, I think of you. You are a true inspiration to me. I love you. Tom Haverford.
Oh, sorry. That's actually for Kendrick Lamar.
Okay.
Here's yours.
Best wishes.
And I mean every word of it.
Nice.
Wow. Well, I guess, you know, it's Tom being Tom.
Well, I mean, it's fine for him to grow up. It's fine for him to have reached the end of a very impressive journey for him. But you know what? He wouldn't be Tom if he didn't have a little bit of that Tom left.
Well, he's become a better version of Tom, but he's still Tom.
Yeah, I'd say that's true.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I wanted to make note of something that was a little visual. So first of all, as Tom is giving his speech, and he tells us that he breaks down 7 different types of successful people, and he uses his friends from Parks and Rec, which I thought was very nice. Real quick, the Andy, each of them has bullet points, which kind of high level summarizes what that person is like.
Gotcha.
So for the Andy, which again, we see a cartoon graphic for all of these, which is tremendous.
Yeah, cute little avatars.
Yes.
Yes.
So for Andy, we see bullet points that say loving, exuberant, and open-hearted.
Okay.
Not bad.
Nice.
April, individualistic, intense, and intimidating.
Mm.
Again, not bad.
Not bad.
A Ben, holding cones of Dunshire, no doubt.
I love it.
The bullet points say level-headed, tactical, and calm under pressure.
True.
That's pretty accurate.
Those are good.
Leslie, bullet points say leader, tireless, optimistic.
Also true.
Very good. A Ron, wearing a red shirt, I might add.
Yes.
And holding an axe. Bullet points, self-reliant, uncompromising, and inner-directed. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Adana, holding a grizzle pad. and bullet points say mysterious, adventurous, and confident. Mm. That's pretty good.
That's good.
And of course, his personal favorite, the Tom, brilliant, trend-setting icon.
Nice.
Naturally. We don't have one for Gary, though.
No. Yeah. You just don't want to be a Gary.
But I thought that was pretty cool.
Those are well described.
Yeah, I agree.
No, those are great summaries of those characters. Well, I think he might have, the Gary shade might have been a little bit undeserved because if I recall properly, Gary's about to be helpful in the solution for Project Swingset.
That's right. So yeah, we transition. So we have now been told Tom's story.
Yes.
We transition back to City Hall in the present, 2017, and we see Leslie finishing her heartfelt hug with Tom. And Leslie asks Tom, "Well, Tom, you said that you're going to fix this before we went billy beep, billy beep, and went into the future. So how are you going to solve it?" And Tom says, "Well, I think we might need the help of the most powerful man in Pawnee, Mayor Gary Gergich."
Nice.
And we then cut to a shot of the nameplate, Mayor Gergich. And we see Leslie and Tom with Jerry in his mayor's office, with Jerry on the phone with someone from maintenance, talking very friendly with them and very nice. Just said, "Hey, could I get some help, you know, for my best friend's maintenance problem?" The person on the other end clearly reacts well to Jerry's polite request, agrees to help, and then they cheerfully end the conversation with each other. Jerry smiles at Leslie and Tom, tells them they are all set. Leslie warmly thanks Jerry, asking him if he's enjoying himself as interim mayor. And Jerry enthusiastically says, "Oh my gosh, I love it. You know, I realize this is just ceremonial. It's not really the real thing, but I'm having such a great time." That's very sweet. Leslie reaches across Jerry's desk to hold his hand in a very heartfelt, sweet moment. And another transition starts. And once again, the transition resolves into a partial blank screen, this time with the word Gary, although I'll always think of him as Jerry.
You I know will that. Too.
Along with a picture of the Pawnee Town logo, and then zooming into a portion of the screen that will tell Jerry's story. And we actually have several rapid time jumps here in succession. Yes. So first we jump to, I think, just a few weeks into the future, where Purd Hapley is making an announcement live on the news telling everyone, "In a turn of events, both shocking and unexpected, interim mayor Gary Gergich was officially elected today thanks to a massive write-in campaign." The camera zooms out a little bit to show Jerry standing next to Purd. And Purd asks, "Mayor Gergich, what are your plans for your first actual term?" And in typical Jerry style, he's very earnest and tells Purd, "Oh, geez, yeah, I have no idea, but this is so crazy. I hope I do a good job and I'm going to try my best, you know."
Yep.
And then another transition starts and we jump into the future again, this time maybe at a guess 5 or 6 years or so. And we find ourselves in city council chambers where apparently Jerry is being sworn into office with the ceremony led by none other than Brandy Max. And as Jerry finishes...
I think this one's in 2023.
Okay.
Yeah.
And as Jerry finishes his oath, Brandy turns to the assembled crowd and says, "As president of city council, I, Councilwoman Brandy Max, star of more than 11,000 adult films in the last 2 years." That's very impressive. "Officially declare..."
By the way, I did the math on that. That's one every 3 hours.
Holy... crap on a crap cracker. "I officially declare Gary Gergich mayor of Pawnee, Indiana for the fourth time."
Wow.
And Jerry warmly thanks everyone. And then another transition starts.
Wow.
And then we jump even further into the future where Jerry is getting sworn in again, right there in city council chambers, but with everything all digital and futuristic and Blade Runner like, you know. And this time Jerry is being sworn into office by a balding Councilman Morris Lurpis,
who
says
so hard,
in a very sneering fashion, "Okay, great. Jerry Gergich, you're now mayor again for the 10th time, proving conclusively that in these corporate states of America, it's the entrenched powers who hold all the cards."
Oh, boy.
And Jerry responds sweetly, like, "Thank you, Councilman Morris. Thank you, Bonnie." And then another transition starts. And we cut even further into the future to the year 2048, where we see the celebration of Jerry's 100th birthday in progress. And the initial shot is of three cakes, the first shaped like a one and the other shaped like zeros, with the words "Happy Birthday" written nearby. The camera then pans up from the cake and we see an outside shot of a large number of people, presumably Jerry's kids and grandkids and great grandkids, etc., gathered around a very old Jerry with Gail sitting next to him, who appears to have not aged at all.
Of
it's
course.
Fantastic. Hey, Robonstantine, please play the rest of Jerry's story.
"Happy birthday, my sweet, sweet husband. We all love you so much."
"I have had the perfect life. I have had the perfect marriage, the perfect children, and the perfect grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And I just want you to know how much I love you."
"Okay, come on, everybody, say Gergich!
Gergich!"
Oh,
Mayor
no.
Gary Gergich died peacefully in his sleep on his 100th birthday, holding the hand of his beloved wife, Gail.
"Man, Gail looks amazing."
Yeah, I know.
"He will now be given the Indiana Notary Society's highest honor, the 21 stamp salute."
That is amazing.
Oh my God.
Rest in peace, friend.
They spelled his name wrong on the tombstone.
Close enough.
Huh.
It's time to go.
Wow. Well, I don't know what Gail eats for breakfast, Mark, but I need some.
I think unicorn tears.
It's got to be. That would make sense.
Isn't that what Voldemort guy, that guy?
Yeah, unicorn blood, but tears is nicer. Yeah.
You know, a little less dark. You know it's really blood.
It's blood. Yeah, whatever. It's we horrible. Call them tears. Evil, just to, evil. We don't want the kids to be upset. That's right.
No, it's tears. Sure, it's tears.
Mark, we're going to definitely talk about this scene there at the end.
No.
The Secret Service.
No. I mean, yes, what? But we
How are.
Are
we not going to talk about that?
No, we are, but not now on account of not now. Everything in its own time. We're like Craig. Alan, this is like Craig when he first encountered Typhoon. We will talk about it, but not now.
All right. I'm holding you to that, though.
All right.
Well, Mark, I think, honestly, I've got about enough juice left for one more segment today. So why don't you set that up, and then we will wrap up part one of our coverage of the season finale.
Such a weenie. Okay. Yeah, we'll do – I agree. We'll do one more clip.
Okay.
And we'll put you to bed, old man, and then we'll all wake up tomorrow.
Get a little nappy time.
Yeah, get a little nappy time.
Come at it strong tomorrow.
Get some more Arbucks. All right.
Whatever. Next week. Whatever it takes. Yes.
We're now back from our multiple time jumps into the future for Jerry's story, which we just heard. And we're now back in the present, Pawnee 2017. And we see now an outside shot of somewhere in Pawnee where Ron is at a swing set. He has his toolbox out and is repairing the broken swing that started this. Mm. The camera then pans to the right and we see Leslie talking with Shauna Mulway Tweep about
the Tweep
about possible headlines for an article covering the gang's last job together as Parks and Rec civil servants. Their conversation moves on to Shauna's personal life, and Shauna admits.
But didn't Leslie have a suggestion, like always, of what the headline should be? Wasn't it something like "Still Swinging, Parks Gang Reunites for One Last Bang"?
Something along those lines. Like, it's a little dirty, but okay, sex sells. And you know, Shauna admits to Leslie she has had her trademark continued streak of bad luck with guys.
Almost too bad.
And Leslie tells Shauna, you know, you're a very nice person. And although your life has been filled with horrific romantic disasters, I just want you to know that I honestly believe that you will find happiness someday. And we see Leslie affectionately put her hand on Shauna's elbow and another transition starts. And once again, the transition resolves into a partial blank screen, this time with the word Shauna, along with a picture of an outside shot of two people walking into Pawnee Park in the lower right corner, and then zooming into a portion of the screen that will tell Shauna Mulway Tweep's story.
Yep.
The screen now says Pawnee 2018. So this is about a year later. And we first see Shauna wearing a white wedding dress, sitting alone on a park bench crying. And a few seconds later, we see Bobby Newport walk up.
That bastard.
Look at Shauna and ask her if she's okay. And through the tears, Shauna tells him that she was supposed to get married today, but her fiance left her at the altar, sending her a text, game running into overtime, we'll try and stop by. Like, what a jerky jerk.
Oh, my God.
Bobby sits down next to Shauna to console her with some simple Bobby Newport wisdom, such as, oh, that sucks. I'm really sorry you're sad. Nobody should ever be sad. That's brilliant.
That's really actually good.
And then he says, you know what helps me when I'm sad? And I think it just might help you too. Here's some gum. My company makes it. and he hands her a stick of gum, and then he takes a stick of gum, and then they're chewing the gum, and they're looking at each other and smiling, and they're chewing gum, and the goofy looks on both their face. And then we cut to later. Apparently that day.
Oh, no.
And they're now at the Pawnee Courthouse, where apparently Shauna and Bobby Newport are getting married.
What?
And the official, it's not Horatio Sands, but it is official. The official invites them to exchange vows, and Bobby starts out, Shauna, I love you so much. I can't believe we just met 5 hours ago. And then Shauna says back, like, I know, right? But I really love you. You're so nice. Remember how you offered me gum? Like, I do remember that. And so, yeah, it goes on like that for a little bit until the official finally says, by the power vested in me, by the state of Indiana, I now pronounce you husband and wife. You may kiss the bride. And the two of them excitedly kiss and then pronounce, we did it. We totally did it. Yeah. And Shauna apparently throws her bouquet of flowers into a nearly empty room. Like the sole man there who's maybe there to legally witness it. He just kind of stares at it.
Yeah, watches it hit the floor.
Shauna claps her hands excitedly and the two kiss once again, blissfully and stupidly happy. And a transition then starts to take us back to the present.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a good place.
Do you hate love? Is that why you're upset by this? Are you an opponent of love?
No, actually, I thought this scene was very sweet, and I was glad they were able to include it. Am I right that this being the producer's cut, we got that, and I believe probably the Jam story, but neither of those were in the standard cut?
That's correct, Alan. There's lots of things I think that the producer's cut arguably adds to the viewing. I think the most telling of the additions, but not the only ones worth talking about, but the most telling of the additions were the inclusion of two complete future storylines. Yeah. One of them, as you said, was for this one, for Shauna Mulway-Tweep, and the other one was for Councilman Jerry Jam. Arigato!
Arguably secondary characters, but
undoubtedly, but important ones.
Both had many appearances.
Many
appearances.
Shauna appearing in the third episode of the entire series.
Wow.
Yeah,
she was there. Yeah, you're right. In season one, all the way back.
Made her way through Brendanowitz, through
Traeger. Yeah, she did. Oh my God. So true. And Jam came later, but there were so many Leslie Jam stories during that period that he became really an iconic character in the show. I was really glad that they both got their stories told in the
future. I agree.
So if you haven't watched that version, please go watch it.
Yes.
And you can do that this week after you listen to this episode, of course.
Yes.
But before we come back to record the second half of
show. That's right.
Yeah. So we're going to pause here. Mm. And so that means in the second half, we'll finish our coverage. I think we've got maybe 8-9 scenes officially left.
Something like that.
We will do our normal shtick and talk about, you know, what some of the tropes of the show were. And I believe in this one, there are many. We can already feel that. Mm. We'll talk about maybe some fun facts. And we'll throw some scores in there.
I mean,
ratings of Little Sebastians.
Yep.
Mark will cry a little bit on air and off air.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
We'll see. And then we'll wrap it up and we'll send everybody home.
That's right. That sounds like a plan.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Yeah. Mark, I'm looking forward to part two.
Yeah, I am too. This is going to be good.
As sad as I am to say goodbye, and we'll probably have one or two episodes remaining. We're going to do a series recap just because.
And I think we should also do a review on the official last episode, the 2020 special.
Well, I think in our final goodbye, our goodbye, we should do the 2020 special coverage since it was kind of a years later thing. And so are we.
Right.
Totally appropriate.
Yeah, I think so.
And then we'll say our goodbyes.
All right.
And that'd be it.
We can do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
that's the plan. I like having a plan.
Oh, man. That's the best.
Well, everybody, we would really appreciate your feedback. We talked about the teaser as well. Go out, Apple Podcast, rate and review us. Send us an email. Anything just to let us know you're out there.
But please rate us high because that would make us sad if you don't. No one should be sad.
No one should be sad. No. Bobby said so.
I know.
Want a stick of gum? My company makes it.
Yes.
All right, Superman? Everybody. Mark, is that the portal?
What? Oh my gosh.
It's been months.
Back there.
Can you please see what's going on?
All right, hold on. Let me.
Yeah.
All right. Excuse me, Romanstein. Hold on. I'm walking past you, buddy. Okay.
What's happening?
There's a portal, and there's a. Someone's handing a post-it note? Hold on.
But it's been months since we've gotten a post-it note from those guys.
I know, so this is going to be good. Okay.
What's it say?
All right. The post-it note says BRT.
What's that mean?
I don't know. Bacon ranch tomato. What am I, scientist?
Is that like one of them their text things? Like be right there?
Oh, maybe that's it. That's like LOL for LOL.
Yeah.
For laugh out loud.
So be right. Does that mean the guys are coming back?
Oh, I hope so. I mean,
wow, that's exciting.
Can't you just step through? I don't understand science.
I'm
not going to do this.
Look, Mark, I don't know. I'm exhausted from part one. We still need to take this break. Let's go on and take our break. And then maybe by the end of the next episode, we'll know if the guys are back.
Yeah. Good timing. Not coming back until it's over.
Yeah. Good Lord. They heard there was work to do.
Well, there is. There is that. All right.
All right. Wow. Okay. Well, that was unexpected.
Yeah. So, all right.
Thank you, everybody. And, gosh, I guess we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Live from Pawnee is a copyrighted production of the creators.
Copyright 2020. All rights reserved. Original music was created and performed by Aaron Emerson of Emerson Studios. Clips are used under Fair Use Doctrine for the purpose of commentary and parody. Please see our website at livefrompani.com for more details or to contact us.